Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of today's discussion with Jimmy Moore, author of a great previous book. You ought to check it out, Cholesterol Clarity. Now he's got an excellent successor to that book, Keto Clarity, Your Definitive Guide to the Benefits of a Low-Carb, High-Fat Diet. Yes, I said high-fat diet. It sounds heretical, but there's a lot of practical applications of ketogenic diet, and that's been scientifically demonstrated in the treatment of conditions like epilepsy. We're seeing more and more research on treatment of Alzheimer's disease, various brain disorders, and it certainly is efficacious for weight loss, and most studies validate its cardiovascular benefits, surprisingly, because we tend to think of fat as the enemy. We talked about that in part one. Now, in part two, we're going to talk about how we can suggest that you practically implement a ketogenic diet if you want to try it. But first, this is a point you made in part one. Ketogenic diet is not necessarily a diet for everyone. You're not advocating that everyone completely eschew carbohydrates and go on a diet that is moderate protein and high fat, correct?
Right, and I'm not even saying that everyone necessarily needs to be in a ketogenic state. Again, if you are very optimal on your vegan diet and you're feeling great and all your blood markers are absolutely wonderful, I'm going to be your biggest fan to keep doing that darn vegan diet. But if you're not running optimally, yeah, definitely this is an option that you should have in your arsenal.
Right. And, you know, I have to say that I would count myself among those who's fortunate that I have A, the right genetics, and B, the right activity level, that I can sustain a diet where I have moderate consumption of carbohydrates. In fact, you know, I'll just tell you what I just had for lunch. I just had some ground lamb with some white rice. In this case, it was white rice. Yep. But I had just done, 1 hour spin session with a very rigorous 20-minute ab session. And, so at a high level of activity and, you know, without pre-diabetes or, you know, hopefully any mental disorders. I'm not sure. I haven't been psychiatrically evaluated in recently, but seems like things are going okay.
You seem pretty cogent, yeah.
So far, so good. I seem to function well, and some people do. But I guess the way to look at this is that the ketogenic diet is a tool that can be implemented to get people to a better place to deal with various disorders. And, of course, in part one, we actually didn't mention the possibility that for certain cancers, the ketogenic diet might be beneficial. So why don't we touch upon that?
That's emerging evidence that's coming. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of human studies on cancer just yet. I was at a conference earlier this year. I moderated a panel at the Ancestral Health Symposium that took place in Berkeley, California. If you type in ketogenic diet cancer AHS-14, you'll find that video, and it was kind of a prestigious panel of oncologists and different people that are experts on this. Yeah, this is what's coming down the pipe in the next few years. We're going to see a lot of great research, and I'm hoping clinical trials with humans, because like I said, unfortunately, it's only been tested in mice right now, a few small studies with humans, but nothing really solid yet. But the idea there is you're starving the cancer of what it wants, and what it wants is sugar. So if you don't feed it sugar, vis-a-vis carbohydrate, guess what? You're going to starve the cancer, and the cancer gets better. That's kind of the theory, the working theory. It's known as the Warburg effect. Otto Warburg actually won the Nobel Prize for that many moons ago. And nobody ever took up the mantle and actually studied it really scientifically. So I hope that does happen here in the coming years.
Well, indeed. And it would be simplistic to say that that's the definitive answer to all forms of cancer. But under certain circumstances, certain cancers at certain stages may respond well to that. On the other hand, there's some people who make the statement that protein is the culprit in cancer and that we ought to limit protein for cancer patients. So there's definitely opposing camps, vegetarian diet versus the ketogenic diet, almost on opposite poles in therapeutic diets for cancer. And it may be that both sides may be right, but we have to learn to target specific cancers with different dietary strategies. I think that probably will turn out that way.
And the gluconeogenesis may be a part of their protein argument, which I would agree with them on. If you're creating glucose, you're not starving that cancer of sugar. So it's possible we are both right.
Right. Oh, that would be the common thread that would unite those two disparate theories. I think
right.
that you've nailed it. So, okay. So from a practical standpoint, how do you know that you are successfully achieving ketosis? Because I remember in the Atkins Center, I very well remember that Atkins used to hand out keto sticks to his patients.
Yeah.
And I also very well remember that some patients would say, I try my darnest. I can't get those sticks to turn purple. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, one of my experts in the book was a registered nurse who actually worked with Dr. Atkins for 3 decades in that very
clinic. Jackie Eberstein, right?
Jackie Eberstein is mm-hmm. her name.
Right.
And I interviewed her for Keto Clarity, and she said everybody coming in the door, yeah, they were handed the keto sticks, and they tested. And then that was the only technology they had when they first started back in the 70s and 80s. Then in the 90s, they got this device that measured for breath ketones, and they started testing for that. But then the company went out of business, and they stopped measuring. So, yeah, for the most part, most people hearing ketosis and measuring for it, all they know about are the urine sticks. So that measures for a ketone body known as acetoacetate. So acetoacetate spills out in the urine, and it changes this basically this stick from pink to purple. So that's the way people have been doing it. But unfortunately, after the adaptation period happens, some people lose acetoacetate because it becomes converted into the blood ketone known as beta hydroxybutyrate. That's why blood ketones tend to be the gold standard in measuring to see how well you're doing in achieving ketosis. And so blood ketone meters are out there. There are 2 major ones on the market right now. Precision Extra is the really good one. There's also one, Novamax Plus, but I don't really like that one because when it's a low reading, it just says LO. It doesn't give you the actual reading.
Do you reference that in your book?
I do.
Okay, good. So that might be resources for individuals who are very serious about pursuing this.
Yeah, and there's also an emerging technology that's coming. There's one device out there that does measure for the breath ketone known as acetone. And the name of the one that's already out there right now is called Ketonics. And again, you can research that one. But there's other ones on the way. There's even these Japanese researchers who are working on an iPhone app.
Oh, yeah.
Basically plug it in and you'll blow into your iPhone and out will come the reading right there on your screen. So
Jimmy, that's the future. That's totally happening. I think
I
there's going to be so
excited about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's going to be great. You know, I'm gonna get an iWatch when it comes out. I'll be an early adopter. And the apps will follow. You know, there's so many
yes.
ways to monitor the functions of the human body that I think will help our patients objectify whether they're reaching their goals. I mean, you might say too much information, but actually these are just tools and signposts to indicate whether you were reaching your target.
And it's coming quicker than people realize. I supported a Kickstarter campaign for this tricorder that you basically just put it on your temple, and it's going to give you a readout of all these different health markers just instantly within 10 seconds. That's the future of medicine, and people are going to become their own health advocates, and then they'll take all this data to their doctor and say, okay, help me interpret this.
Wait a minute, tricorder, that's Dr. Bones in Star
yeah,
Trek,
I know,
isn't it?
Are you, it is. It's cool.
You're
I can't wait to get that one, man.
You're dating yourself. You're dating yourself. Okay.
My wife, she's a Trekkie.
All right. Okay, so there are ways that you can determine now with greater precision whether you're reaching the desired state of ketosis. Is it de rigueur? Is it absolutely necessary that you get into full-blown ketosis to achieve your goals on a ketogenic diet, or can you sort of, you know, derive some of the benefits even if you're not fully on a ketogenic metabolism?
I think if you dibble dabble, you're going to get mediocre results.
Okay.
I think if you're going to do this, you probably need to do the parameters for at least 60 days that we talk about in Keto Clarity, lowering your carbs, your tolerance, moderating your protein and upping your fat and testing. If you do it over a 60-day period, then you know, okay, that's what it feels like to be in a full-on state of ketosis. then you can decide, okay, is this something I want to continue on with or not? Now, the testing thing, some people are like, well, I don't want to test the rest of my life. And I'm going, you don't really need to. Once you kind of know what it takes to get certain levels of ketosis, you don't have to test all the time. Test like once a month, just kind of see where you stand sometimes. But you don't have to be neurotic about it. That is not what we're talking about here.
So in terms of practical implementation, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I'm thinking back on my breakfast. Eggs, so far, so good. Then there was millet toast with butter. Butter, okay, millet blows the whole thing.
Right.
I also had a side of beans because I just got back from Mexico, and I love the Mexican breakfast. So I prepared some beans with some hot sauce, you know, trying to replicate my experience down there.
Nice.
But the beans won't cut it either because they have a carbohydrate component. So give us a I know you have recipes and suggestions in the book to help guide people through this, but give us an idea of what a day might look like trying to implement a ketogenic diet. Is it pretty rigorous and, you know, kind of off-putting?
No, to put it in a word. And it's interesting you said kind of tell us a breakfast, lunch, dinner. You had that earlier. And I want people to stop thinking about food in terms of times of day to eat, because we traditionally have breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack, and even midnight snack. I think Taco Bell promotes it as the fourth meal, you know, and you're not going to obsess about food to that degree. That's the cool thing about a ketogenic diet is you're able to eat one, two meals a day and be completely satisfied on those meals. And that's going to be shocking to people. They're like, well, it's lunchtime, I'm supposed to eat lunch.
Right.
It's dinner time with family, I'm supposed to eat dinner. And if you're going to do this, I think, and do it well, I think you have to listen to your own body and
right.
realize that if you're hungry, it's time to eat. If you're not hungry, don't eat.
Well, it's hard for some people to imagine not being hungry, but being sort of equanimous about food for the first time in their lives, because what drives appetite, of course, the size of the bolus of food in your stomach, because your stomach has sensors to feel the, you know, literally the size of the volume of the food. But a lot of our sensors are based on blood sugar. And, you know, if what happens to people when they use our test meal, the glucose tolerance test, happens in real life, a lot of people have lower blood sugar at the end of a meal a couple hours later than they do before they even ate. So it's almost like they're going backwards in terms of blood sugar, and then they're going to really want to put the feed bag on a few hours later. And this eliminates that.
Right. There's no reactive hypoglycemia happening here. And that's the really neat thing. So talking about in a day what I would eat, let's just say I wake up in the morning, I'm not hungry. Guess what? Breakfast is not necessarily the most important meal of the day in the morning. And I'm saying you can have breakfast anytime, because look at the word, break fast. That's all it means. You're breaking the fast. So if it's breaking the fast at 12 o'clock noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, then that's your break fast. So one meal that I really love, and we have this recipe in Keto Clarity, is for keto eggs. So what I do is I cook 4 pastured eggs.
And we're not talking egg whites here, so don't be afraid of the yolks. They're full of cholesterol, but don't be afraid of them, right?
That's exactly right. And sometimes I'll even throw out the egg whites and just use the yolks to get a little extra fat and cholesterol in there, and cook it in grass-fed butter. And then I'll put some cheese on top of that, full fat, of course, not American cheese. That's not cheese. And then a whole avocado on the side, maybe some sour cream and some bacon. Now, that's a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind, I'm only eating once or twice a day. And so I've got to get those calories in. One thing that a lot of people make a mistake, Dr. Hoffman, when they do this is they feel like they can't eat a lot, but then they don't eat enough, and their body, you don't want to be that calorie restricted. Let's put it that way. And it's extremely easy to calorie restrict because you are so satisfied from the fat and ketones in this diet. So making sure that I get enough calories in that meal. So let's say that meal was 1,200 calories, which is probably true, probably around 1,500 calories. Then I don't really need to eat a whole lot more the rest of the day if I eat anything more at all. So if I do eat again later in the day, if I'm a little bit peckish and I need something to eat, maybe some macadamia nuts or something like that, some high fat snack if I need a snack. I don't usually snack. I don't really need snacks. But if I have a meal, it'll be, again, a perfectly portioned size of steak, for example. Again, you don't want too much protein, so an 8-ounce steak is no longer on the table for me, maybe a 4 or 5-ounce steak, and then supplementing that with some more fat in terms of butter, lard, coconut oil, putting that around it, and then having green beans cooked in coconut oil. That's amazing. And spices. So, yeah, I mean, it's nothing weird food. It's actual real food, and people can eat that and consume it. And the amazing thing is how quickly your cravings for the carby stuff go away and how little you are hungry. That's the big thing that people are just shocked by when they go on this diet.
Well, let's talk about the period of adaptation, because I know, you know, working with people over time, changing their diets often to a low-carb diet, some people go through distress because there are a couple of things happening. One is there are food allergies, and we believe that some people have addictive allergic cycles where they crave precisely the food that they're allergic to, and they go through a form of withdrawal when they go off of, say, wheat or dairy. There are powerful antigens or morphine-like chemicals in dairy and in wheat that cause people to really jones. They go through a withdrawal. And also, you know, just getting off carbs, there's a certain amount of distress while the brain adapts to using fat as a fuel, as opposed to getting quick energy from, you know, like an energy drink. The energy drinks are all, you know, basically sugar laden, and that's the way you're supposed to, you know, get your brain active.
Right. Yeah. So we affectionately refer to this as keto flu, and people. I really wish I had known about this way back in 2004 when I started, because I had the leg cramps and I had the sluggishness and I had all the headaches and everything. It's a side effect. What I did not realize then that I now realize now and I'm articulating to people is when you do this, you got to eat more salt. And that's going to be shocking to a lot of people. Oh, I thought I was supposed to reduce my salt intake. Well, unless you're salt sensitive, you really don't have any reason to reduce your salt intake. So sea salt is amazing. Mix it with some bone broth, and that is an amazing electrolyte restorer. And you're going to need to replenish a lot of salt, especially early on in your diet. So drinking that broth, having lots of fluid in those early days.
Why is that? Because you're diuresing, literally, you're losing a lot of retained bodily fluid?
Right. So the glycogen stores have sugar in them, but they also have a lot of water in them. So, yeah, you're releasing all those stores, which may be why you have to go to the bathroom a lot when you first start doing this as well. So flushing that out of your system. Magnesium and potassium also help with the electrolyte balance. All of these things will help keep that keto flu from being really a downer. Again, I wish I had known about that when I first started, but it's really a non-issue once you get those electrolytes balanced.
And what are, in terms of the primary sources of fat, because you want to actually emphasize fat. You mentioned coconut oil, you mentioned butter, you mentioned cheese, you mentioned fatty meats. These are some of the things that you want to emphasize, correct?
And avocados and avocado oil and macadamia nut oil, these are all saturated and monounsaturated fats. Of course, omega-3 fats get thrown in there as well, the fish oil. But what we're trying to stay away from are the highly inflammatory oils like we talked about in cholesterol clarity, of avoiding the vegetable oils. Those are the ones you really don't want. Of course, trans fats you don't want in your diet either.
The omega-6 oils.
Yeah, so anything that's kind of man-made, and I just went off on Kerrygold today because they put canola oil into their wonderful grass-fed butter, and I'm going, why did you ruin this really great product with a crappy man-made oil? Real whole food sources of fat is what you're looking for.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that you mentioned a couple of foods that are rich in what's called omega-7, palmetto oleic acid, which turns out to have heart benefits and anti-inflammatory benefits, and also helps combat insulin resistance. We're just becoming aware of, you know, we've heard of the omega-6s, the omega-3s. We know everybody knows about fish oil, EPA, DHA, but palmetto oleic acid is becoming a new player on the scene. Macadamia nuts, the best natural source, dietary source of palmetto oleic acid.
Nice.
Good stuff.
I'll eat more in honor of that today.
You're on the right track. Are there any other points from the, I know our time is limited. Are there any other points from the book that you'd like to bring out in this interview?
Yeah, I just think people need to realize that this is not a weight loss diet necessarily. I've had so many emails from people that bought the book. Oh, well, my blood ketones are this level and I'm not losing weight. So what's going on? And I try to articulate to them, look, it puts your body in a great position to lose weight, but there are so many non-diet related factors mm-hmm. that could be at play preventing your body from losing weight, from stress, lack of sleep, hormonal imbalances, mm-hmm. just getting older. There are so many things right. that can impact it. Don't think keto is some magic pill for losing weight. It is not. But it does give you a fighting chance while you try to figure out some of these other issues.
Well, you know, I've coined a phrase to describe that phenomenon, and you can use it if you want because I haven't copyrighted it yet. It's, there are 50 ways to keep your blubber, to paraphrase Simon and Garfunkel. 50 ways to leave your lover. There are 50. In other words, the body has redundant systems to maintain body fat. That's an evolutionary adaptation. So that's why people sometimes can't crash through the weight barrier. And we who are in the field of nutrition are bedeviled with these multiple mechanisms that we have to address, such as you mentioned, high stress levels, perhaps low testosterone levels in men, or occult hidden hypothyroidism. Predominantly women, but also potentially in men, and so on and so on and so on. And that's one of the reasons why science hasn't cracked the code on weight loss as much as they're, you know, that's the holy grail of pharmaceutical research. They'd love to find a perfect weight loss pill that helps everyone without any side effects. Haven't done it so far.
Well, and the unfortunate thing is they're trying to do it in a one-size-fits-all modality, and they're not looking at the patient individually and saying, oh, well, you have this, and oh, you have this, and it's totally different modalities for treating that patient. Everybody wants a one-size-fits-all, and it just does not exist.
Exactly. So today's Intelligent Medicine call to action vis-a-vis Keto Clarity, the book is available, all the usual sources, correct?
Yes.
And your website is?
LivinLaVitaLowCarb.com, and you'll see the blog, the podcast, and all that that I do.
And you haven't heard from Jimmy Buffett's attorneys on that?
So from Ricky Martin?
Ricky Martin. I'm sorry. That shows my pop culture IQ is low, so sorry.
Yeah, you're dating yourself, too. Star Trek and Simon and Garfunkel. You could do a more later version. Let's see, 50 Shades of Blubber. How about that one?
There we go. That would resonate. That would resonate among the millennials. Okay, so that's the website. And then also you have a great series of podcasts, correct?
Yes, the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show is the livinlowcarbshow.com. We're the longest running health podcast on the internet. Very honored to have that distinction.
And what might one hear if one goes there? Who have you interviewed, and what are some of the subjects you tackle there?
I need to get the great Ronald Hoffman. I said your name. Sorry about that.
Happens all the time. It happens
all
to
the time.
Yep.
It's a Freudian slip. Yeah, I interview people in every aspect of health and nutrition and fitness, and I've even had a few vegans on there from time to time. Dr. Mm-hmm. John McDougall, Dr. Ben Ornish has been on there.
Great.
I just have conversations with people, and if you like, you know, just hearing kind of eavesdropping in on people talking about interesting stuff, that's mm-hmm. kind of what you get on the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show.
Well, you're kindred spirit, because that's what I like to do. Okay, and also available on iTunes. And, of course, you're very active on social media. You can be followed on Twitter, and you've got a Facebook page, correct?
Yes, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm everywhere.
You're just a happening dude. Okay. and a slim and trim dude, you know, judging from your picture. So, great. Keto Clarity, for those of you interested in exploring this new paradigm, it's got all the latest science, and it explains the process in great detail. I recommend the book very highly. Jimmy, as always, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.